Good morning. You are listening to the Lowell Association for the Blind, LAB Radio. LAB Radio is a member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network, your main source of accessible community news and information. Located in Lowell, Massachusetts, we read local news, editorials, feature stories, and more. LAB Radio is brought to you by volunteers and staff of the Lowell Association for the Blind. This is Dorothy, and I will be reading from the Reader's Digest. LAB would like to thank the Nancy I, and I'm sorry, my glasses aren't working too well today, the Nancy L. and Richard K. Donahue Charitable Foundation for their support. And this is the latest April Reader's Digest, and we have here, okay, Living History. In April, the battles of Lexington and Concord will be fought all over again, as they are every year in the Massachusetts towns where they were first shot, where the first shots of the American Revolution rang out. Bringing the past to life tends to be a lifelong hobby, says reenactor Edward Heinrich, director of the Herkimer Home State Historic Site in upstate New York. It takes years to perfect your knowledge, and it becomes a lifestyle. Veterans of our Revolutionary War may have been its first reenactors. That's because soldiers in the Continental Army used to stage sham fights, mock battles without musket balls, when generals reviewed them. This continued even after the war in towns like Bennington, Vermont, which held commemorative sham fights in 1789 and 1802. Reenactments of history are almost as old as history itself. In ancient Rome, Julius Caesar staged skirmishes featuring horses, elephants, and warships. And while they fought under false pretenses, the prisoners forced to take part in these spectacles died very real deaths. As the Roman Empire grew, so did these displays. A mock naval battle held in AD 52 involved more than 19,000 men. Renaissance fairs are among the most popular historical reenactments nowadays. One of the biggest in the United States is the Texas Renaissance Festival, which attracts more than 500,000 guests each year. And while some fairgoers think the turkey legs taste suspiciously like ham, they are, in fact, turkey meat that gets cured and smoked as ham is today. The cooking method is accurate to the time period. The meat, not so much. As a New World bird, turkey wasn't on the menu in medieval Europe. It was a California couple who put on the first modern Renaissance fair in 1963. Phyllis and Ron Patterson recreated an Elizabethan celebration in their backyard. And though they strove for historical accuracy, not everything was perfect. I remember a young girl running up to me, Phyllis Patterson told the Los Angeles Times in 1987, and saying, "You've got to do something. There's someone's back there playing Bach." A drone literally flew in the face of medieval reenactors in Lipetsk, Russia, in 2016. In response, a knight launched his spear and took down the offending gadget. The drone was meant to capture footage of the festival, but instead it caught this dramatic movement, which then went viral. No newfangled doodads are allowed in any reenactment put on by the Vikings of North America. The organization's website warns, "We disallow modern items that would break the spell." But a similar group in the UK called the Vikings advertise their availability for anything that falls within our dateline, which is 700 CE to 1100 CE. I'm not sure what CE means. I know what AD means in BC, but CE is a new one to me. Anachronisms aside, taking part in reenactments is probably the best way you can learn about a history, says Heinrichs. While reenactors are often teachers, veterans, or history buffs, anyone can take part, though most groups ask that you be at least in your late teens to fight alongside them. Maybe the most famous Civil War reenactment was at the 1913 Gettysburg Reunion, when more than 50,000 veterans of that war set up camp in the Pennsylvania town for the 50th anniversary of the famous battle. This November, a Lincoln impersonator will visit the battlefield and give the Gettysburg Address. Each summer, a World War II reenactment in Canute, Ohio, draws about 1,500 reenactors and 45,000 spectators to a stretch of Lake Erie that resembles Omaha Beach, one of the five beaches in Normandy, France, where Allied forces overwhelmed the Nazis and began to liberate Western Europe. The Ohio event started in 1999 and is now one of the country's largest D-Day reenactments. The best way to become a reenactor is to find a group or unit that you like, according to YouTuber Chris the Redcoat, because large events are often made up of smaller circles of friends. Chris answers common questions he gets about reenacting in one of his videos. Another reenactor, Brandon Fischella, reveals some of the strangest questions he's fielded. "I've been asked if I was North or South," he says, in a World War II reenactment. And most serious reenactors wear kits, not costumes. These museum-worthy pieces are usually handmade, so they take a long time to assemble. But they are labors of love. As Samantha Graves Brownell, a soldier with the 2nd Continental Artillery Enactment Group out of Albany, New York, says, "You're working to be as authentic as you can. Even my eyeglasses have to be specific." But you don't have to adopt a whole new wardrobe to embrace history. As we celebrate the 250th anniversary of the United States this year, you might want to throw tea into Boston Harbor at the Boston Tea Party Ships and Museum, or listen to the first public reading of the Declaration of Independence in Philadelphia. To learn more about these and other related events, visit America250.org. the website of the U.S. Semi-Quincentennial Commission. Its aim to inspire us all to reflect on our past and renew our commitment to the ideals of democracy. And that really is something. We're going to celebrate our 250th birthday in July. Now, that seems quite old, but if you go into Europe, there's nothing, a lot of the things there are in the 14th century and even be older than that. So it is amazing. Okay. Now moving on. Before filing your taxes, and of course that's next week, see what's allowed and what isn't. While the IRS doesn't permit you to list your pet as a dependent, you may list your cat as a business deduction if your business is overrun by vermin. A South Carolina scrapyard owner successfully wrote off $300 worth of cat food that he had used to lure strays onto his property to deter rats. After a failing furniture store went up in flames, the business owner reported the income he had received from the insurance company to the IRS. Good. Less good was trying to deduct the cost of the arsonist he had hired to burn down the building. With a name like Chesty Love, chances are you're not a physicist. Love was an exotic dancer who successfully argued that she should be allowed to write off $2,000 for the depreciation of her size 56 FF. breast implants because they were a stage prop essential to her work. Likewise, glimmering and glistening is essential to the careers of bodybuilders, which is why the U.S. tax court agreed to let a Wisconsin bodybuilder deduct thousands of dollars worth of body and tanning oils. The IRS once ruled that a taxpayer could deduct the cost of a clarinet and some clarinet lessons for his son because an orthodontist had recommended playing the instrument to treat the son's severe overbite. So there's a couple of ways to really kind of twerk or tweak your tax forms. The ultimate impulse buy. After a few minutes at the open house, I am comfortable committing to live in this house forever. I feel fine buying things as long as I do my research first. That's why after 10 minutes in an open house, I'm now completely comfortable going into debt for the next 30 years. By the way, this was written by Talia Argandese in the latest edition of the Reader's Digest. Before I bought a used car, I read 26 reviews of that specific make, model, and year, written by 26 different car experts. I studied every detail of the Carfax report. I test drove in the car four times, including once with my mechanic and once with my mechanic's mechanic. It makes sense to spend the equivalent of 55 cars for a house that at least between 2:34 p.m. and 2:44 p.m. on a Saturday smelled only slightly bad. I recently bought a humidifier, too. I cross-checked the wire cutter recommendation with customers' Amazon's reviews. My cousin, who has the same humidifier, outlined the pros and cons for me. I ultimately bought it because it has a 90-day satisfaction guaranteed return policy. I don't need a satisfaction guarantee on this house, though, because the real estate agent will give me a piece of paper where the previous owner will promise on the honor system that the roof doesn't leak. Last night, I wanted takeout, but I spent so much time reading Yelp reviews and looking at menus that I got too hungry and had to eat microwaved canned soup and sliced white bread. Today, I have no doubts about paying the price of 314,000 cans of soup for the privilege of living in this house, which I haven't slept in once for the rest of my life. After all, I walked through it once, opened every closet door, and nodded solemnly at each. I determined, based on optimism, that the wall between the living room and the dining room isn't load-bearing. As the bank draws up a cashier's check for the down payment, reducing my account to zero, I won't wonder whether the high-pitched shrieks I heard during the open house were emitted by a soon-to-be neighbor or the house's poltergeist. I am sure I can convert the tool shed I think I glimpsed in the backyard into a modest Airbnb, which will raise money for renovations and an exorcism. As someone who carefully researched every consumer choice, I appreciate how the open house has allowed me to make an informed decision. For example, I learned that this house has a powder room with moldy wallpaper that will likely peel right off and a toilet that probably flushes. So I'm telling the real estate agent to offer twice the asking price, also known as 267 times my monthly salary. You know what? It's such a competitive market. I'll also promise the seller my firstborn baby. I'll be too busy with renovations to protect a child from the poltergeist anyway. Besides, according to my split-second eyeball guesstimates at the open house, the bedroom doesn't have enough space for a crib. And so be careful if you're in the market for a house And don't take the first one, you see, unless you really love it. Okay, now we're going to go with the body attacks itself. And this is about autoimmune diseases. Heidi Hughes from Tampa, Florida was 34 when she noticed that her fingers were unusually stiff. At first, she thought it was just from sleeping in a strange position, or perhaps carpal tunnel syndrome from hours spent typing on her computer. But the stiffness continued, and her fingers began to ache and swell. Eventually, she struggled even to open a jar of peanut butter, with pain shooting through her wrists. Albert Stowell was in his 60s when he started to experience slurred speech, double vision, choking episodes, and muscle weakness. A farmer in the Austin, Texas area, he was having trouble managing his livestock and machinery. Chelsea H. of Lakeland, Florida, was in high school when she started feeling bloated and uncomfortable after eating common foods like pizza and pasta. As she began her career in marketing, the bloating became painful and more frequent. She was constantly exhausted, barely scraping together the energy she needed for work. Each of these people would visit doctor after doctor, take test after test, before finally getting a diagnosis. Heidi learned she has rheumatoid arthritis, when the immune system attacks the lining of the joints. Albert has myasthenia gravis, which occurs when the immune system's antibodies interfere with communication between nerves and muscles, leading to muscle weakness that worsens with activity. And Chelsea is dealing with celiac disease, in which eating gluten, a protein found in wheat, barley, and rye, prompts an immune attack on the lining of the small intestine, leading to bloating, diarrhea, abdominal pain, and fatigue. All are autoimmune diseases. They occur when the immune system, which is supposed to defend the body from illness, mistakenly attacks it instead. While the exact cause is unknown, there are different theories about why the immune system suddenly malfunctions, including genetics, hormones, physical stress, injury, or other illness. According to the Cleveland Clinic, there are over 100 types of autoimmune diseases. Although they target different organs and tissues, all result in chronic inflammation from a misdirected immune response. And while the early symptoms of autoimmune diseases can be subtle, if they are left unchecked, the chronic inflammation can eventually cause irreparable damage. The bodily glitch is surprisingly common. A December 2024 study published in the Journal of Clinical Investigation found that about 15 million people in the U.S. have an autoimmune disease, and a third of those have more than one. Some experts believe the true number is closer to 50 million. Wow. Since many people remain undiagnosed or misdiagnosed for years, about 80% of those with autoimmune diseases are women, 63 to 95% depending on the disease. Researchers say that this likely stems from a combination of hormonal and genetic factors. Estrogen boosts the immune response, and the X chromosome carries more immune-related genes than the Y chromosomes. Concerningly, the rate of autoimmune diseases are on the rise. Experts suspect that this surge is linked to a combination of environmental exposures such as pollution and chemicals, but microbiome changes, viral infections, and lifestyle factors such as stress, diet, and sleep. Some other common autoimmune diseases include Hashimoto's thyroiditis, Sjogren's syndrome, psoriasis, lupus, type 1 diabetes, multiple sclerosis, vitiligo, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, Graves' disease, and alopecia areata. Treatment varies depending on which organs or tissues are affected. Autoimmune conditions cannot yet be definitely cured, and so far only limited preventive strategies exist for high-risk individuals. Therapy generally focuses on controlling systems and limiting damage, often with a combination of medication and lifestyle changes such as diet, stress management, physical therapy, and exercise. A variety of drugs work by suppressing the entire immune system, leaving those taking them vulnerable to infections and other illnesses. But newer biological therapies, treatments made from living cells, are able to target specific parts of the immune system, giving patients fewer side effects and better control over their symptoms. In some cases, patients may receive infusions of antibodies from donated plasma, or in severe cases, have a bone marrow transplant. Scientists are also studying CART, cell therapy, where the immune system T cells are reprogrammed to eliminate its B cells, which can cause autoimmune disease, as a new treatment. Heidi, Chelsea, and Albert each found a way to manage their conditions. Heidi finally found relief with a biologic drug called Adalimumab, brand name Humira, and others. Physical therapy and an anti-inflammatory diet. Chelsea follows a strictly gluten-free diet and takes a daily multivitamin to make sure her body gets the nutrients it needs. While she admits that there are a lot of food she misses, she also says she'll take how she feels now any day over how she felt when she was eating gluten. As for Albert, it took a year and a half and visits to 7 different neurologists before he finally got the diagnosis of myasthenia gravis. Even then, the first treatments he tried weren't very helpful. But then in 2020, he entered a clinical trial for Zilucoplan, brand name Zilbrysq, a drug that targets a specific part of the immune system that affects myasthenia gravis symptoms. That, he says, was like a spotting a light at the end of a dark tunnel. Today, his symptoms are under control, he says, and he can once again enjoy time with his family and handle his daily tasks. So that's, if you have an autoimmune disease, this may give you a little helpful hint. Okay, moving on. This is still in the world of medicine. Brush up. A new study from New York University, which the lead author called the largest study and the most detailed analysis of its kind, found that certain microbes in the mouth were linked to a sharply higher risk of pancreatic cancer. By analyzing saliva samples from more than 120,000 adults and tracking their health for nearly a decade, the team compared results from 445 participants who were diagnosed with pancreatic cancer with 445 who were not. A total of 27 oral bacteria and fungi, some notably tied to gum disease, were linked to having a 3.5 times greater risk of pancreatic cancer. The study was also the first to identify a type of candida yeast that can be found both in the mouth and in the pancreatic tumors. The study authors say, good oral hygiene can protect you against periodontal disease and now possibly cancer. Rather than curse gray hair, consider that it might indicate the body's built-in defense against melanoma, the most dangerous type of skin cancer. Scientists from the University of Tokyo examined stem cells responsible for hair and skin coloring. They found that when these cells, stem cells experience a type of DNA damage, they are then removed from the body instead of continuing to divide. This causes hair to turn gray. In contrast, cancer-causing chemicals can cause this protective graying response, keeping the cells in self-renewal mode and opening the door for potential cancer formation. Talk it out. A recent survey from healthcare system Orlando Health found that 38% of men said they would rather sit in traffic or even watch their favorite team lose than talk to their doctor about prostate health. That reluctance matters, since experts say as many as 60% of men experience prostate enlargement and associated problems with urination by age 60 and 80% by age 80. But urologists say there are simple, effective solutions for its condition, so it's worth a chat with your healthcare provider. A protective cushion. Carrying extra pounds is generally associated with all kinds of health problems, including an increased risk of heart problems, arthritis, diabetes, and even mood disorders. But in one study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, being overweight was found to offer an expected benefit: better outcomes after surgery for older adults. In a study of 414 adults, 65 and older, researchers from the University of California, Los Angeles, found that those whose body mass index, the BMI, classified them as overweight or obese, had the fewest complications after major elective procedures. They also had the lowest rates of death after 30 days, at least than 1%. The risk of post-surgical problems did go up among the severely obese, with a BMI of 40 or higher, to 21%. Okay, and this one is, more mangoes, please. A study at the University of California, Davis, found that 2 servings of mangoes a day can help postmenopausal women keep their hearts healthy by lowering blood pressure and cholesterol levels. The study included 24 women aged 50 to 70 who were overweight or obese. For 2 weeks, the women ate approximately 1.5 cups of mangoes each day. About 2 hours after eating mangoes, the women's systolic blood pressure dropped by about 6 points. At the end of the study, the participants had reduced their total cholesterol and LDL, which is the bad cholesterol levels, by about 13 points. Just by eating mangoes. And a mango can be very, very tasty. A hack golfer is having a tough day, shanking his shots off the fairway and into roughs. Pointing to a lake where he'd just deposited his last ball, he shouts, "I can't take it anymore. I'm going to drown myself." His caddy shakes his head. "I doubt you could keep your head down that long." A semi-truck full of VapoRub just overturned on the highway. Thankfully, there was no congestion. Since April is Math and Statistics Awareness Month, There are gags for our left brain friends. What kind of beast do mathematicians like to dance to? Logarithms. Why did the obtuse triangle go to the beach? It was over 90 degrees. I got in a fight with 3, 5, 7, 9, 11. The odds were against me. Why was the mathematician such a terrible gardener? All his plants had square roots. Did you hear about the mathematician who's afraid of negative numbers? She'll stop at nothing to avoid them. Okay, a therapist has a theory that couples who make love once a day are the happiest. So he tests it as a seminar by asking, how many people here make love once a day? Half the people raise their hands, grinning widely. Once a week, a third of the audience members raise their hands. Their grins a bit less vibrant. Once a month, a few hands tepidly go up. Then he asked, okay, how about once a year? One man in the back row jumps up and down, jubilantly waving his hands. The therapist is shocked. This disproves his theory. If you make love only once a year, he asked, why are you so happy? The man yells, because today's the day. The fact that there's a highway to hell and only a stairway to heaven says a lot about the anticipated traffic numbers. It's just a few funny things here. Okay. And you've all heard of AI, I'm sure. And it's really, these are imaginary, but they're really coming to life. Or so people want you to think they are. Whether you've already chummy or you've been avoiding getting acquainted, our guide will help you understand how to best use the technology to make your life easier and what to watch out for. And this was written by Sage Lazaro for Reader's Digest. These days, artificial intelligence, known as AI, is showing up everywhere in our daily lives, from conference rooms to classrooms, healthcare assessments to dinner table conversations. What sets AI apart from past tech innovations? These advanced systems are capable of doing things that previously only humans could do, and doing them quickly. And remember, it's artificial intelligence. It's not real. As a technology journalist for publications like Fortune and VentureBeat, I've been covering AI for a decade and have watched the evolution firsthand. The progress has been remarkable, although widespread use of AI has been growing since the 2010s, including under the hood of technologies you use every day, like smartphones and social media, the current global obsession, which it really began in November 2022, when OpenAI launched ChatGPT. ChatGPT was the first chatbot of its kind, capable of performing a wide variety of tasks and holding human-sounding conversations. It quickly captured the public's imagination and became the fastest-growing consumer software application in history, reaching 100 million users in its first 2 months. Fast forward to today. One-third of U.S. adults say they've used an AI chatbot, and about the same percentage of teens say they interact with one daily, according to the Pew Research Center. Despite this widespread adoption, the story of AI is very much still unfolding, and the technology is far from perfect. But you can still use its unprecedented computing powers to your benefit. To engage safely, effectively, and creatively, it's important to understand what you're working with. Here's what you need to know. What is AI? AI is a technology that enables computers and machines to perform complex tasks that are typically associated with human intelligence, such as learning and problem solving. When people talk about AI today, they're usually referring to generative AI, a type of AI system that can create writing, images, videos, and computer code. Even more specifically, they're often talking about AI chatbots, assistants, and other conversational AI systems powered by large language models, sophisticated software trained on vast amounts of human language data. These systems range from general-purpose tools like ChatGPT and Claude to specialized characters and agents made for specific interactions. If you've ever engaged with Alexa or Siri, you've used something similar. Chatbots are OpenAI's ChatGPT, Google's Gemini, and Anthropic's Claude can also act as assistants, but they're built on newer AI systems and capable of tasks that are far more varied and intricate. Additionally, they're not confined to a music mode. You can type to them, send them documents, and have them analyze photos. AI systems essentially operate as gigantic pattern and analyzing prediction machines. To create AI chatbots, impressive language capabilities, scientists and engineers have fed practically all the text on the internet into a type of computer system designed to identify predictable patterns in human language. When you ask a chatbot to do something, also called giving it a prompt, it draws out the original data and patterns within its data sets to predict what words would come next to deliver a logical answer in sentence form. It doesn't know, but it's really good at guessing and mimicking how humans talk. There has been increasing debate within scientific community about whether we should categorize what AI does as thinking. Research has shown that some AI chatbots behave in ways that resemble thinking or judgment. But while we know how AI models work overall, we can't currently trace the internal decisions they make to arrive at each specific response. The questions about consciousness are notoriously hard, says Vincent Conitzer, a professor of computer science and philosophy at Oxford and Carnegie Mellon universities. We really need to make progress on them. If we truly want to understand in what ways we can say AI thinks, but it's safe to say that right now, AI is not like the sentient superintelligence you've seen in movies. What can you do with AI? The sky really is the limit. I've heard of people using AI to make a picture book for their kids, create a workout plan, and even name a puppy. One person told me she uploaded photos of her feet and had the chatbot analyze her arch and the wear patterns on her shoes to recommend running sneakers with the best fit. Another referred to AI as her personal chef or staff. At the end of the day, she opens up Claude and brain dumps every word to do them, to do item and miscellaneous thing lingering in her mind. Claude then organizes it into steps and creates her schedule for the week. Overall, AI tools can be incredibly useful for quickly synthesizing large amounts of data, breaking down complex topics in a simple way and pulling on key things from text, like summarizing a dense research paper or making sense of your own scattered notes. These tools can also work with images and videos. For example, when assembling furniture, I have uploaded photos of the parts and instructions that AI could help me figure out in a confusing step. But one of the most popular ways to use AI is as creative through a thought partner. All Shabbats can help you brainstorm and will act as a sounding board for you to bounce ideas off. Whether you're planning a garden, improving your resume, writing a screenplay, or strategizing marketing initiatives for your first small business. I've interviewed countless executives and technology leaders who have made it a priority to figure out how AI can best serve them. And they're almost universally using AI in this way, inviting it to offer feedback or poke holes in their logic. Personally, I've found a lot of benefit in the kitchen. ChatGPT adds up to tedious factions from recipes for me instantly, and Claude actually helped me solve one of my biggest everyday burdens, feeling burnt out on meal planning. I explained my weekly schedule, my dietary preferences, and what worked and didn't seem to work about my current methods. And we came up with a structure, and it has saved me tons of time and made a significant difference in my life. So AI can be good. Now, tips for using AI. How should you decide which chatbot or platform to use? Currently, there's no best one, though everyone's using AI has personal preferences. Tech companies are constantly rolling out new versions of their products, but as of the writing of this piece, the new products generally do all the same things and do them about as well as one another. Overall, it's smart to experiment. Try different platforms or bring the same request to different chatbots to see how each responds. When working with AI tools like Claude and ChatGPT, be specific with your prompts. AI tools are prone to filling in the blanks, which can easily lead them to give you an output that doesn't match what you're looking for. Consider what you want. You want the AI to guess and what you need to specify. Suggest Aaron Celebi, AI lead and principal engineer at advertising firm WPP. The answer you get will only be as good as the prompt you give. Think about what level of detail you want and whether you want to answer in a specific format like a chart or a bulleted list or a 200-word email. It also helps to break down complex requests into smaller steps. For example, instead of giving AI a broad prompt like help me start a business, first give it context about who you are and what kind of business you're looking to create. Then have it help you research the market and develop a business plan. Many AI tools have memory capabilities, so you can have a continuous conversation on a topic, getting deeper with every back and forth, unlike when you're researching the web. With AI, context is everything. If you want to help in writing a difficult email to a colleague, make sure to first explain the situation. The relationship dynamics the roots that you already tried, the tone you want to strike, and the outcome you're hoping for. What to watch out for? According to analysis by Harvard Business Review, Therapy and companionship are the top ways people are using generative AI, but some people form emotional dependencies leading to detachment from their real lives. Research from OpenAI and MIT that looked at ChatGPT found that these types of harmful outcomes can stem from longer chat sessions and that heavy daily use was correlated with increased loneliness. Tragically, several suicides have been linked to AI chat usage, sparking lawsuits against companies including OpenAI, Character.ai, and Google. Another issue, AI tools aren't always yet fully reliable in terms of accuracy. They're known to routinely fabricate information and present it confidently as fact, a phenomenon often referred to as hallucinating. So you shouldn't depend on them for something crucial like health or legal advice. You can ask a chatbot to use verified or scientific sourcing and to share the links of all the articles it's referencing so you can ensure accuracy by fact-checking the information yourself. Chatbots often lack the most up-to-date information as well. If you're using AI to plan a vacation, it can certainly suggest top attractions, but it may miss crucial details, like the museum you really want to visit is temporarily closed. As far as trust goes, it's also vital to remember that AI chatbots are created by companies vying to beat each other in a competitive market. Trust AI as much as you trust a car dealer. Celebi says, sure, they're here to provide you a service, but the AI doesn't work for you. It works for a tech giant. And that's something to always keep in mind of. Connected to that, it's important to keep data privacy risks in mind. If you share personal details and private thoughts with AI tools, know that protection for your information is far from guaranteed. Last year, OpenAI experimented with making users' chat logs, records of their online conversations, discoverable in Google searches, completely unbeknownst to the others. Like, the company also launched a health feature earlier this year. But as reported by Time Magazine, the features services are not subject to HIPAA. The United States will lack the type of data protection laws that have become commonplace around the world. And as with anything online, chatbots are a risk of hacks and the data breaches. AI-generated images and videos are increasingly commonplace online. The current tools make it impossible for anyone to create images and videos so realistic that it's often no longer possible to discern what's real and what's AI. Much of AI-generated content is harmless, although some of it is low-quality, low-effort, high-volume material referred to as AI slop. And an increasing amount is created to spread false information and deceive people about current events. So operating with a strong sense of skepticism is important as you analyze the media in your feeds. What's next? Tech companies are fervently working to develop AI giants, software systems that can take action on your behalf, sometimes autonomously. Instead of just using AI to help you plan your next vacation, imagine AI doing it fully on its own, even using your credit card to book your flight and hotel for you. future AI giant agents could take the chief of staff role to the next level, handling your emails, scheduling meetings, adding them to your calendar, and setting reminders. It's the next step to potentially creating the kind of true AI assistant that has been a staple of sci-fi for decades. Overall, though, it's a common sentiment in the tech industry that no one can honestly predict how AI technology will evolve. The most important thing to know is that nothing about AI is inevitable. It's been created by people, and we get to decide whether or not to use it, trust it, and regulate it. Becoming familiar with AI is the first step to being able to help share the role it has in all of our lives. Even though it was spent to a decade tracking the development in the fields, I'm no super user, and you don't have to be either. The way I've been exploring AI is to start small. This is also my parting advice. See where it can simply complex or mundane task to help you enhance your creativity. Remain discerning about where AI actually helps you and where it introduces too much risk. And consider what you actually like doing yourself and don't want to load off to AI tools. You're in the driver's seat. And if you're using AI, don't forget that. Have it work for you. I have a friend who, when she's writing a letter, she will have AI review it, but she has told it what the main points she wants to have in there. AI will just kind of enhance the language a bit, so it sounds like a far more professional letter. Okay, and it's time now for me to say goodbye to next week. And hopefully Jane will be back with me next week. And I hope you've enjoyed hearing all about AI.